Okay, so good to see everybody again. It's enjoyable to be online. I haven't been online with you all for a while, so nice to see some faces a little closer. I'm in the hall. I'm often squinting at the little squares. I'm still squinting, but not quite as much. And I have the good fortune to speak about joy tonight. So many of you will probably know that we're exploring this map of transcendent dependent origination. And it talks about a natural flow of practice, of the momentum of our practice. When our awareness and energy is no longer stuck in a repetitive loop or samsaric loop. And so, this kind of lesser known teaching, so it's still a teaching on dependent origination or the way that everything is supported by other causes and conditions coming together. Right? So everything from the dust in the air, everything from the leaves on the plant and the desk to the light coming out of the light switch, is not self-existing, is not independently existing. So everything that arises is dependent on a web of interrelated conditions. So that goes for suffering, and it goes for the ending of suffering. It goes for the alleviation of suffering. And so this map or trail of transcendent dependent origination is a description of what happens when we maintain awareness and sow the seeds or plant the seeds of the wholesome with confidence, with sometimes this flow starts with something like generosity or sila or ethical sensitivity. But there's a turning there where we make a choice and we kind of gently allow things to go in a different direction. So this is really different than using our will and insisting that I want things to be that way. It's more like tracking like an underground spring, right? Or like tracking the movement of water for the path of least resistance. So I'm remembering, images always come to mind for me, and I'm remembering that out here where I live, we have two preschools next to us. We have a preschool on either side. So mostly the sounds that I get to hear during the day are, dog sounds and kids playing. So it's quite lovely. And when it rains, mostly these are preschools in which kids are allowed to play outdoors pretty much all the time. So it's a hardy bunch. There's a lot of rain gear and boots and mud and, a lot of the kids love to play this game when it's raining. I've heard my son just exclaim with complete delight when there's enough water running down a partial hill. He would just scream at drainage, drainage, and so it was this tracking of the water down the hill and just getting all of the obstacles out of the way that he could so the water would gain enough momentum to have a flow. So it wasn't creating the flow or creating the water, it was a matter of kind of removing obstacles and tracking it so that it would flow down the hill in a gush and a muddy gush. So, in some ways, that's what we're tracking in this map. We're tracking the flow of the wholesome conditions. And it's very easy in practice to get the kind of erroneous idea or the just not quite the full view that our practice is sort of a continuous slog through the hindrances. Have you ever felt that way? It's kind of a slog through the hindrances. Yep, there's that again. And oh boy, okay, doubt coming back. And sloth and torpor, restlessness, just it can feel repetitive and challenging and quite easily lead to a kind of discouragement, right? So what's very helpful to keep in mind, so the Buddha did say that he taught suffering and the end of suffering, right? That was his central theme. But what's important to keep in mind is just that we can always attend to how suffering is being created and released or relieved. This other trail or this other current or path of the wholesome is always flowing as well. Right? It's already here. So that's going to be one of the themes for tonight as we reflect on joy. Is so this was a phrase that Rodney would use a lot. Some of you might remember. If there was something that we found ourselves kind of leaning for towards, or a quality that we kind of were straining to try to get, there was this reminder or phrase that it's already here. Yeah. It's already here in some form. And so this natural momentum or cascade, as the Clear Mountain monks say, this cascade is always present in some form. It might be a little further underground, it might feel like a trickle, but it also follows the same slope. Yeah. So what happens when we bring awareness to resistance patterns, are the patterns of our habit mind, the way conditions come together to create suffering? When we bring a full-hearted, curious, kind, open awareness to that, what happens is that that starts to soften or loosen in the light of our understanding. Our grip on it starts to change, our relationship starts to change, and that knot starts to unravel. What happens when we bring our awareness or our attention to the wholesome? Causes and conditions, qualities that are always running, is that they deepen. They deepen naturally. We don't have to make them deepen. They deepen. Joy is a natural part of being human. Remember? Remember that? It's so clear when we're around kids, right? So, I've worked, a lot of my work life was in caregiving. And so it was a lot of kind of working with people's negativity and mental states, especially in states of confusion or dementia or just a lot of kind of challenge and resistance. So it was, I often felt like my entire role was recognizing that there was some suffering happening. And then finding the spark that that person had of wholesome care or love or joy, finding it And then I was just explaining this to someone the other day, and just slowly nudging them to that, back to that. So I would encourage, So tell me about that time your daughter came to visit, or let's go outside and watch kids playing in the middle of a very negative spiral. Yeah. Or we turn on music and redirect to just the experience of hearing the sounds of that music that they loved. So it was almost like a little detective work. Where is this life flowing already? Yeah, where's this little river of joy flowing already? So in this kind of beginning of this sequence, as we've been tracking it this year, instead of suffering being so painful that it leads to more another round of ignorance. Instead, it leads to a moment of trust or faith, and feeling that confidence leads naturally to joy. Right? So this starts heading in a different direction. So the scholar monk Bhikkhu Anālayo, who translated wonderful translations and reflections on the Satipatthana Sutta, has this wonderful saying that has come back to me again and again in practice, which is the Satipatthana, or the foundations of mindfulness, characterize spiritual training or our path as a progressive or continual refinement of joy. Doesn't that seem radical? Our practice is a continual refinement of joy. So that's something to keep in mind. So I think what he's pointing to is that our experience of joy may change as we practice. Maybe in the beginning, or at times, we think that the deepest form of joy might be getting something pleasant from the senses, having a really pleasant experience, a good meal, even a really satisfying like relational experience, taking a trip. Which all can have a kind of joy and pleasure. But I think what Anālayo was pointing to is as we practice, as our practice deepens, that experience of joy gets deeper. It gets far deeper than that kind of sensual hit or that momentary rush of joy. It starts to become more embodied. It starts to become more independent of the conditions around us, more naturally arising, like that inner spring or well. And I think it becomes more about what we're offering rather than what we're getting. So I want to just reflect on some of those pieces, and then I'd love to hear kind of how it's going for you. When I first heard teachings on joy, I was kind of distrustful and resistant, right? I was sometimes they say that people are either more enamored with the first noble truth or the third noble truth. Right? Either more enamored with plunging into dukkha, taking it head on, the challenge and the, and then others are more interested in the alleviation of it. So we need both. But I was definitely more of the first. And the comment has been made frequently throughout my life that I have been, tend to be a more serious person, So yes, I was often getting comments that I needed to lighten up and, just not take things so seriously. And so when the teachings, when I started to hear teachings about joy, it felt like someone was telling me, as they had many times before, that I needed to produce something that wasn't present in the moment, right? That I needed to somehow make joy happen, or look on the bright side, or perk up, or lighten up, be less serious. So one time I was walking down the sidewalk, I was in California, and I was on my way to visit somebody and just minding my own business. And someone rolled down their window and yelled at me from the window, "Hey, is it really that bad? Is it really that bad?" So clearly, something about how I was holding my face made it seem as though I was taking myself perhaps a slight bit too seriously. So anyway, when I first started hearing teachings of joy, I felt a bit resistant. And at one point, I was living in a community in which one of the practices someone was offering was laughter yoga. So maybe you've heard about this. Sometimes in hospitals and different places, people come together and just start laughing. And it's supposed to be contagious. Like one person starts laughing, and even though nothing's really funny because we're so porous to one another, you're laughing at the other person laughing. And then what was once a kind of a serious topic, something gets triggered and people are laughing. So when I started practicing or attempting this in the spiritual community that I was living in, what I found was that as people around me were laughing, I started crying. So I was crying during the laughter yoga. And it was because I don't know why it was exactly, but a lot of it was because I thought that I needed to be having a different experience than I was having. And the wonder of this practice for me, especially in the beginning, was just to be able to leave myself alone, and have whatever experience I was having. So I would say that my practice started with just sensing a little bit of relief and space, just allowing myself a little bit more space to be however I was. Right? So it didn't feel like joy at first to me. It felt like a bit of ease. Yeah, just a little bit of ease and space. But that started to feel more and more trustworthy, that was a trail or a small stream that I could follow. So that sense of relating to myself a little bit differently, so I could leave myself alone a little bit more. And that has really deepened over time and kind of taken on a life of its own, and become much more trustworthy. So what I noticed as practice was deepening was that part of that kind of stepping out of my own way, or letting myself have more ease of being, was the way in which it was so easy to feel a constriction around a particular identity or role or some kind of persona or character that I needed to defend or maintain or promote. And it seemed to be that a lot of the tension was around kind of playing a role that felt like it was separating me from life. It's a little bit of a separation. And in the moments of practice, when I could experiment with letting that role soften and not define me so completely, it's as though life would come rushing in. The vitality and the naturalness of the human being within the role would almost like peek out. And the years of academic conditioning, performance training, living in a competitive society where your worth is based on whether you succeed, of you succeeding and not failing, getting praised and not getting blamed, doing well and not doing poorly, being good and not being bad. And so we set up strategies and personas to try to position ourselves well within the eight worldly winds, put ourselves in good stead in between those buffeting winds, and feeling the tension of trying to hold that together is blocking the flow of life. So along with our roles, are a host of expectations. So if I am a caregiver, if I really identify with the role of mother or daughter or student or teacher or I don't know, healthcare worker, whatever it might be, if that becomes wedded, that role becomes wedded to my vitality, to my deepest being, we will always feel separate from life, and we will always be in a somewhat distorted relationship to life. Sayadaw Utejaniya, wonderful, very down to earth and pithy teacher, talks about not self, the teachings on not self as nature. Instead of saying anatta or not self, he says, remember that you are nature. Yeah, that what happens to you is not personal. Again, it's these conditions either gaining momentum or kind of falling apart or easing up or releasing their grip. So those are all natural processes that we can track. So instead of saying, I am this or I am that, we notice that that we are on the receiving end of whole streams of natural conditions, supporting conditions that are not ours. They do not belong to us, but we are the intersection of them. So when we were, when Tori and I were talking tonight about joy, it's a perfect topic because for me, often Tori is the embodiment of joy, right? I just think about her and I feel joyful. When we're teaching together, I'm often quite, quiet and kind of, I don't know, measured or even. And sometimes I'll look over and she's like screeching with delight. And that's so good and so wonderful that we can get kind of a vicarious hit. And it's Dhamma joy. It is, she said several times, I just love teaching. I love being able to share in that way. And it is indeed, I've been around her, it is like this is my impression, somewhat effortless. Like it just bubbles up and out. Yeah. And that is wonderful to be a part of. So joy often has this a characteristic or quality of kind of erupting out of nowhere. It's not because we've done something right. It's because we've been open to the circumstances around us. And one thing I love reflecting on with qualities like this that can feel so elusive, at least they could to me in the beginning, can feel like joy, what? Like maybe peace occasionally, maybe calm, but joy. In thinking about Tuareg and thinking about Philip Moffat, her teacher. So I think Philip Moffat is one of the teachers who I first sat with, who I really felt like this person is really happy. Not only are they wise, a lot of teachers seemed wise and very articulate and extremely helpful and dedicated in pointing towards awakening. But Philip embodied joy and happiness, and like he was enjoying himself. And that was a new thing for me to experience. And so to think about Philip and Tuareg and kind of that stream of teachings, we get to be on the receiving end of some of the beautiful qualities of the teachers and Sangha members that were around. So when we say, trust and trust, confidence, wholesome ethical behavior, generosity, these are the supporting conditions for joy. It means that we really notice those in the people around us. We really take the time to notice the wholesome as it's arising in us and in the people around us. And then we realize that it's no one's province. It's no one's fixed character trait. Sometimes we're joyful, sometimes we're not, but when it arises in other people, we can really deeply notice and appreciate it. So if I'm stuck in my role as the quiet one, and other people are the joyful ones, then we really limit ourselves. We say, this is who I am. And if we're really stuck on that, then what does that mean? What are the ramifications of that? It means that when Tuareg is feeling, I really need quiet, that's really a difficult message to heed, right? But wait, I'm the joyful one. And I don't know if this is her experience, but I'm just talking about roles in general. Yeah. If I'm the joyful one, what happens when I don't feel joyful? What happens when I feel quiet? And if I'm the quiet one, what happens when there's a burst of joy? What do I do? Where do I put it? And indeed, when that did start erupting in my practice, I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know what to do. Do I sing? Do I bow? Where does this go? What language do we have for praise? Yeah, for grace. For wonder. What do we do with that? Does that need expression? Sometimes it's quiet, but sometimes it's surprising. I know it's very surprising for me. I wasn't expecting it. C.S. Lewis wrote this book after a long period of depression after the loss of his wife. This wonderful title, Surprised by Joy. Surprised by joy. So joy is often surprising. It catches us off guard. And if it's not a part of how we envision ourselves, we may miss it. We may miss it. So we really want to be able to attune to it. One of my dear friends, speaking about spontaneous eruptions of joy, one of my dear friends, when she was in elementary school, they were learning about wolves and the behavior of wolves. And the teacher was explaining about the different ways that wolves would call out to each other and howl. And in the middle of class, completely spontaneously, she just erupted in a howl, like a full-bodied howl. And it's like that with joy, right? It's not always a cascade, but we can feel something rise up at the core of our being that's very human, that will not be repressed. It cannot be completely shut down or repressed. It can be forgotten, can be buried far underground, but it rises to the surface and erupts. So I've been amazed in the last couple of talks I've given, and I think it's this theme. I think this theme is really working on us this year. I don't know how you all feel, but you kind of live the talk as you're. As a teacher, you live the talk, but hopefully you all are feeling that as well, that if you go deeply into it, it's kind of practicing you. It's showing you, it's taking you. So in the last couple of talks that I've given, I can feel, even as I'm talking, that I'm kind of gaining a joyful momentum. And a couple of times lately, there's been like a spontaneous yelp from from someone in the Sangha, and that has never happened before, and it's now happened twice, and like a yelp of delight, and that is so wonderful because you can't plan that, you can't tell yourself, okay, joy now, but. It is a way of relating to our experience that's kind of open and expectant in a way that we're kind of in the realm of not knowing what can happen next. Yeah. And then we're very poised for that element of surprise. Yeah. And so that can come in a lot of different ways and flavors. For some reason, a lot of kid imagery tonight, but my son and his friends some years ago had this game that was called The Floor is Lava. Maybe some of you have seen this game. It's called The Floor is Lava, and just plastic pieces that you set out over your entire floor. Little plastic, like squares of different colors. And so you pretend that the whole floor is molten lava, and these little squares are your kind of safe spaces, and you have to leap between them, in order to be safe from this lava that's all around. And so it's wonderful to be like jumping around and pretending that the floor is, bubbling hot and all of that. But it struck me as I've been playing this game over the years, that sometimes that is how we feel when we're really identified with a role or a state or a view or an opinion or one aspect of our experience, when we take one aspect of our experience and take it to be the whole, it's like we're these little islands or silos, right? Cut off from the whole, and we're kind of hovering on our little spot. And that's what it feels like to be enclosed in a too narrow version of who we are, right? It feels like there's danger everywhere. And I have to stay right here in my safe zone. I have to stay separate, protected, and kind of leap from safe zone to safe zone. So to start to experience the way that the Dharma moves naturally when it starts to flow in our lives is to realize that it's less and less like we are these silos in a river of lava or fear, danger, and more like there is this underlying natural, vital stream of Dhamma, of the wholesome, that is always present, that is always present. And when we're aware of it, a lot of the boundaries and constrictions and limitations that have been too small start to naturally fall away as that river gains momentum and starts to overflow more and more. So what's really helpful in this joy, happiness kind of cascade, and I mentioned this last time when I spoke about trust or faith, is to notice where things are flowing more easily already. Right? Instead of being fixated or upset at the few areas where we feel like we're hitting a wall. Hitting a wall, hitting a wall. Oh no, let me try it again. Well, no, there's a wall. Nope. Let me try again. Instead of being really stuck at the feet of our seemingly intractable challenges, to kind of notice where there is a natural flow of the wholesome or the Dharma already. Where is there a kind of buoyancy already? I've been having a wonderful time. I often, I take public transportation and the ferries a lot. And often people are trying to find ways to connect to one another, to have a conversation, to be social, to connect. And so often it's commiserating about the news, right? Or sharing some difficult, challenging news and complaining or commiserating. But more and more, I've been noticing that it's possible to inject or steer the conversation in slightly different ways. So, just like I do with caregiving clients, you can start talking about pets. You can. Just the other day, I was sitting next to somebody on the freeway. And he wanted to engage me in the news. And I said, to be honest, these days, I'm just exchanging images of people's animals back and forth. And that's extremely joyful. And that's keeping me functional. It's keeping me engaged with other people in a delightful way so that I can continue to be effective in the world. And he got that, and then he showed me a photo of his little terrier, Elva, and his whole demeanor changed. Yeah. So this is possible. This is very possible. And we know that deep down, it is not all puppies and kittens. We know this. There are deeply challenging things that need our care and energy. But the reality is, we don't have the care and energy and uprightness if we don't have a little bit of the joy of being human together. We actually don't. So, joy, I think of as a part of resistance, a necessary part of resisting the box of our roles and our views and opinions and our conscripted ways of being. Yeah. Joy kind of bursts out. It's irrational. It bursts out of those corners and that straitjacket of self. Okay. So I think I want to mention one more thing. Because often we feel a kind of deep Dharma joy, deep Dharma joy at the happiness of others. Or often we notice the deepening of others and the kind of flowering and blossoming of others. And that's a wonderful thing, especially in a community, to feel that and to notice that. And that might be the deepest form of joy. One of my dear teaching friends, Matthew Brensilver, always says, as Dhamma teachers, we're pretty much paid in mudita or appreciative joy. That's kind of our currency, is joy at the joy of others. So I remember a very sweet moment with my teacher. So, thinking a lot about lineage these days. And just like I said, with the wholesome qualities of joy, Tuari, Philip, these qualities kind of come in a cascade to us already. It's not like we start with a clean slate. We're the amazing recipients of a lot of things that are coming downstream already. So to just appreciate that instead of these lone wolves on these kind of little rocks in the middle of hostile and dangerous territory, we're actually a part of a huge network and flow of supportive qualities, beautiful, wholesome qualities that are flowing through and around the human beings all around us. Isn't that incredible? And so we just get to often sit here and breathe it in. It's not the only thing that's happening, but to incline your mind in that direction, gives us the strength and capacity to approach it skillfully. Yeah, and in a way that sets something new in motion. So we're not just doing the whole loop again and again. So if we need to have an identity, let our identity be as a participant in this lineage that is moving towards freedom and kindness. So we receive and we give. We receive and we give. We receive and we give. And it becomes one fluid motion. And when that fluid motion is really operating fully, naturally, in us and through us, there is nothing more joyful than that. There is nothing more joyful than that. Completely unconcerned with, did I get my share? Did I measure up? Did I do a good job? What did they think of me? Was that okay? It's just the feeling or the experience of having the needs and the resources to meet a certain amount of suffering and distress in a way that's helpful. Have you ever experienced that? Like, oh, I actually have the capacity to meet this particular need and just offer whatever I have fully. Just Tamir and I have been talking a lot about love bombing. Just don't hold back. Now's the time. We don't hold back. Just be sloppy, be persistent, and just like go for it. Who cares? It's like, let's do this. So there is nothing more joyful than that, than feeling like you are in a place where your suffering and what's arisen out of your suffering, your learning, your joy can be shared with someone else. That is what we're here for. 100%. So I had a memory the other day of my teacher, my root teacher, Rodney, when we were taking a walk and I was experiencing a tremendous upwelling of joy that was completely unexpected to me. I had no idea that that was even possible. Again, I was just looking for relief and for calm. I would have been fine with that. But here was this, like out of nowhere, just a joy of being out of nowhere. And that just naturally wants to be shared. It just overflows. It just wants to be shared. And so I was sharing it as best I could. And I could see how deeply joyful that was for him to receive my joy. And so then it was like a mutual just feeding of wholesome joy. What else are we here for? And he said, "Do you understand how deeply do you understand what I'm experiencing right now?" And I said, "I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm not sure I get it." Because I didn't at the time. I was just surprised by my own thing. And then the other day, I had an experience of, so many of you know that I've led the young adult retreat, or the young, well, the young adult retreat, but the young adult group since Steve Armstrong helped me start it in 2015. Right? Or 2014. So it's been 12 years. And so watching people, I don't know, mature and come into themselves and develop in the Dharma. So the other day, this group of young adults who I'm really close to sent, they always send me photos when they're doing things together. So this whole group of young people, each of whom I know really, really well, are all sitting together in community, having a meal, sharing a meal at someone's house, sharing Dharma, and looking radiant. Yeah. A whole group of them forming wholesome community, natural community. I didn't prompt it. I didn't create a group and a Google form and make them sit together. They found each other and are creating their own culture, their own thing. And then they're sharing it with me. And they always do that. And I felt like a grandmother. I just so touched, because just like want their flourishing, just want their flourishing, and to be contributing to that in any way is extraordinary. To be contributing to someone's expression of beauty and freedom is extraordinary. And so then, in receiving that photo, I remembered that experience with Rodney. And I realized I know now what he was referring to. I know now. I think I know what he was experiencing because I don't think it gets better than that. I really don't. Okay, so I wrote this down so I wouldn't forget it. And I can't find it, but there is that Tagore quote, and we were talking about it the other day. Was it? I can't remember, but it stayed with me. Do you know it, Tamara? Grab it. I wrote it, I even we were talking about it. me see. I have too many tabs open, as I'm sure many of you can relate to. Okay. I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted and behold, service was joy. Yeah. So I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted and behold, service was joy. So again, I feel like we're helping each other discover that exquisite dance of community in which we are. When we're really in that flow of the wholesome, we can't tell whether we're giving or receiving because it's both happening at the same time. And there's a kind of deep joy that we can experience on independent, solo, silent retreat. And that is deep, and that's its own cascade that leads to wisdom and clarity and gathering. But there is a kind of flow in and through relationships in which our openness allows us to both receive and to give simultaneously that puts us in a wider flow of life in which we are gathered and which we are acting from wisdom and discernment, but it is very dynamic and it's constantly moving around through changing conditions. So the water that's pouring down the mountain has a completely different relationship to obstacles. It's not a big block that's sitting in front of us that we can't do anything about. This water, as it gains momentum, is moving around rocks. It's finding a rock and then it's moving. It's finding a stuck place and then it's continuing to move and weave and change along with the flow of life. So last month we went with the family to the Grand Canyon. And it was snowing, so we went for like half an hour in hats and scarves, went out, took a photo, and looked down into this canyon that over just an immense amount of geologic time, the Colorado River has etched this groove in the land that is just it just takes the top of your head off to contemplate that and to look into that. The power of water just moving where it is, moving with the natural flow and current in and around conditions, not taking itself too seriously. Is extremely strong and powerful force. Yeah, joyful force. So let's do that. Let's do that. Okay. I talked longer again, but I so appreciate all of you. Appreciate being on this path together and I hope that you can recognize and allow your own both eruptions of joy and deep wellsprings of joy because they are very apparent to those of us who are leaders in this community. I'm very aware of that. So, okay. Let's take just a moment to let the words settle and then a few moments for questions and comments. Okay. So we'll leave the bell for tonight since I think maybe at most half people can hear it. But I'd love to hear from a few folks, just your reflections, questions, really anything is fair game. Yeah, Monica.
Okay, and then we have someone in the room as well.
Okay, great.
Hi, can you hear me now?
I can. Yeah, we can. Hi, nice to see you.
Me as well. Thank you, Carrie, for the talk. And hi, Sangha. I've been away, but good to see everyone. I really resonated with how you described kind of like the quality of joy, the sources of joy changing. Over the period of practice, and that's been my experience. Before I was practicing, I had these really high amplitude moments of joy, but they were very external and very kind of like I was always afraid of losing them, and I did lose them because they were based on like I like to go hiking, and I like and the rest of it was relational, but so they weren't like technically unhealthy, but they were still like how I was coping with, really deep unhappiness. As it shifted for me over the years, I find that the joy now is really coming from like living in my integrity and doing good things and being equally kind to myself and others, like all this dharma stuff.
All this Dharma stuff. What do you know? It actually works.
It feels more solid.
Yes.
Like I also have a question about this, and I would not trade that for those other joys of the past. I do have a question about that because I also heard someone at Clear Mountain once ask the Ajahns, and I think we ran out of time, or at least I don't remember the answer. He was like, "Well, before I started meditating, I really liked skiing. It brought me a lot of joy, and now, it's okay. The skiing is okay." And that's really kind of how I feel about some of the stuff, including some relational stuff.
Yeah.
Feel like, kind to others in the way that the Dharma describes it, but like I don't need to be propped up, like I don't,
Yes.
and but like at the same time, I kind of like miss some of those things, but not enough. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but
Yeah.
I would also not trade it.
I think it's not so much.
Hiking still. It's like
Can you still go hiking? Yes, go hiking. Yes. But just watch. So it's really not about the activity, right? It's not about the activity. It's about how we're approaching it, right? So some things naturally fall away. I think that's true, like some like kind of overtly harmful behaviors might fall away in our practice. I started practicing in my college years, and the impulse to, I did a lot of things that college students do, and I did it for a while during my 20s, and some of that just naturally fell away. But wholesome activities that we're doing, if we really need them to work, right? If we need them to work and we're really invested in this kind of fixing me, or I need this to have a certain kind of experience, or then it might work sometimes, but we're going to feel that kind of rise and fall, like you said. It's going to be really dependent on external conditions. And if those conditions shift, what we'll notice is a some kind of crash or some kind of drop, you know? So we'll notice that shift. But so maybe for a while certain activities fall away so that you can kind of give more of yourself to this sort of deepening in the Dharma. And then once there's enough momentum, maybe some of those come back. But when they come back, they're a lot lighter because you don't need them in the same way. You know? So maybe you go hiking and you can just enjoy, like deeply enjoy just the movement of your feet or the fresh air or just the experience of being with company, of not being overstimulated, of the fact that, trees are wondrous. Some of these landscapes are absolutely wondrous, and our senses are awake. And that is a certain kind of pleasure, but there's also a deep joy of being that we can experience in different environments. So we don't want to get too kind of punitive and restrictive with ourselves, you know? That's another trap, right? We can get scared. So that was the other thing that the Buddha mentioned in terms of pleasure. Why was I scared of wholesome pleasure? Why was I scared of wholesome pleasure in my practice? So it's just something to investigate. What's my relationship to some of these activities? Am I really invested in them, in making me feel a certain way? Or can I kind of, or am I more free to move in and out of them? And then, ironically, they become more satisfying because we don't need them. And people become more, it becomes more deeply enjoyable to be around if we don't need them to be a certain way, or we're not so afraid of them being a certain way. It frees them up to be however they are, and we can appreciate them in all their weirdness and quirkiness and uniqueness, right? And ourselves as well.
As you were talking, I came to realize that really what I used to identify as hiking joy, a lot of it was really me, a lot of it was something else. And it had a really high amplitude, but it really was kind of an avoidance of the other things. And so now I think I can come back to hiking with a
That's right.
newer, different joy. So
That's exactly right. Yes.
thank you
Yeah.
so much.
Absolutely. Great. And so, is there somebody in the room? I can't.
Hi, Carrie. It's Leslie.
Hi, Leslie.
I was reflecting on your talk about joy and just remembering having talks with you and just even the Dhamma working, because even if it was something that wasn't very pleasant, I could say wee because it was like, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I don't know what the next step is. I don't know where it's going. You know, and it's sort of like riding that waterfall. Wee, you know, where is it going? Am I going to hit something or not? I mean, it just reminds me that sometimes that's how life feels to me, like I'm just riding something, you
That's
know,
it.
just enjoying it. I have a book that is about the aesthetics of joy, and one of the things that she talks about are things like bubbles and confetti and color, and those things help me when things aren't so hot, you know. It helps me just the simple pleasure of may having bubbles. Anyway, that's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, well, it has a kind of effervescent quality sometimes. And when we get to PT, which is a kind of, sometimes it's translated as rapture, it has that kind of effervescent, like bubbly, there's like a physiological kind of bubbly, not like hyper-productive, personality-wise, but just a kind of vitality, a bubbliness. So that's interesting about the aesthetics piece. I loved what you said about kind of riding that wave. And it really is, if we're kind of attuned to the present moment, not only not knowing, but not needing to know. Yeah. Then it's like this continual sort of discovery. Like it's just, wow. And now that, wow. And it's like if we don't have it all figured out, and we don't have to have it all figured out, and we're willing to not, again, we have this way of just wanting to put it into the box, like into the square that's on the floor of lava, or want to put it into the cell of the spreadsheet. So it's, if it's in the cell of the spreadsheet, then it's containable. Now I know what to do with it. Now I can cut and paste. Now I can cut and paste it. Now I can manage it. And I've just packaged life like this. Whew. Okay, that's a manageable square. But that's what we do. And it's fine to do that if we know what we're doing. We don't mistake life for being that size. Life is not the size square. Life is everywhere, all directions, everything, everywhere, all at once. But it follows certain patterns, right? It follows certain natural laws. It's not chaos. And what we can learn how to do is attune and align with the natural, and flow is kind of a tough word sometimes, but the natural momentum of Dhamma, of things that are going in a helpful direction. We can feel that. So if you're doing an activity, I know our time is running short. So a good test is after the activity that you're doing, whether it's whatever it is, whether it's hiking, whether you're with friends, whether you're I don't know, gardening, walking, whatever it might be, afterwards, do you feel like there's a kind of hangover, where you have to come back? And Monica talked about it as an escape. If it's something you're doing as kind of an escape, and we need healthy distractions sometimes, but if it's something that's kind of an escape, then you'll feel afterwards like a little bit of a hangover or a readjustment, like after watching Netflix or, after kind of taking yourself out of the flow of life, it will be an adjustment to try to re-enter it. But if you're kind of staying as best you can in the flow, moving through conditions, moving with and around obstacles, not making it solid, not making it me, not making it permanent, then it's like you're moving with life. One time I had an image of it's like standing up in a river. So maybe sometimes of the feeling of like letting the river sort of carry us and support us and hold us. And then maybe there's a point where we're like fully engaged in meeting it, like fully there with all of our strength, all of our capacity, all of our everything. And then the wholesome has a certain just presence to it. So it's almost like we're standing in the river. So at the risk of derailing us into metaphors of no end, I'm going to close for tonight. Thank you all for thank you for your practice, and thank you for the way that we so naturally give and receive in the Sangha and circulate this kind of joy. So may that be of great benefit, continued benefit, not just to us, But may that radiate out, to continue to radiate out, to touch everyone we come in contact with. So those known to us, those unknown, those near and far, in ways that we may not even understand or know, may our practice benefit all beings everywhere, without exception. Okay. Great. Appreciate you. Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Tamira. I think I heard that Ryan is back there. Thank you, greeters. Thank you, everyone who came to make this gathering happen tonight.